The album Hungry Ghosts. Okay, there it is, turning it up for Gavin Steinhobel, my special guest on a Wednesday morning at this time. Gavin is an attorney at law from Kloppers Inc. in the Balito Village. He specializes in mainly property matters, but has a wide knowledge of all things legal and is a very good man to know if you have a legal matter. But generally, we tend to talk around issues relating to life and style in the greater Balito area. And I noticed that you particularly are one of the South Africans that is celebratory in the sense that Donald Trump has come in as USA's 47th president. Well, it's around for the second time, and he has hit the ground running, certainly not pulling punches and doing what he does. He's created a kind of a whirlwind. Not everyone is in favor.
I think, so we obviously off the back of four dismal years in terms of direction and, you know, the culture wars and the divisiveness of politics. And, you know, the American stuff always bubbles over into other countries and our own country. And one thing I obviously noticed is that Trump won the popular vote. That means that Americans, by and large, and he's been singing off one hymn sheet throughout, by and large have bought into his idea that, you know, things have gone too far. And I often think of like life as a sort of, and politics especially, as a sort of a pendulum, you know, where one side finds a message that they feel will bring them home in the elections, and then they drum it and they take it to its extreme. And in the case of the Biden-Kamala administration, beyond beyond what is rational anymore. And then the average person gets left behind, and they go, well, you know, as long as they've got free speech, they start grumbling about it, and the feeling starts, you know, that you start feeling like the politicians have left you behind. And then somebody comes and says, well, you know, I'm going to reverse all of this nonsense. And of course, you know, that's how Donald won the popular vote. So, I mean, if you look at some of the stuff, I think one must always bear in mind that the legacy media or the big newspapers and television stations like CNN and MSNBC, I'm just going to abandon that altogether. But all those big stations and newspapers, you know, they were very, they weren't impartial. They're very democratically funded, Democratic Party, and they were towing that line. And so, you know, they maligned him at every turn. They never reported properly on his speeches. It was all heavily edited, and you got a version, almost a cartoon version of Donald Trump.
They're eating the cats.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, it's easy to take sound bites like that and make somebody look a fool if that's your agenda. And, you know, I don't know how many people sat down, but I sat down and listened to the entire inauguration speech on Monday night. And I thought, first of all, he's obviously come a long way as a statesman. He spoke very well. He limited sort of the trolling that he normally does. And I thought it was a message of hope. I think it was a message that Americans needed to hear with their high inflation and the fact that, you know, they're very divisive at the moment, and then there's no unity in the country. And I think his appeal to that. If you look at his executive orders, you know, one of the first ones, and, you know, for that pendulum to swing, you do need free and open speech. And we know what happened in COVID, and we know what happened on social media and the government's interference and putting their fingers on the scale of everything. And, you know, the Twitter files that came out when Elon took over and the absolute extent to which the CIA and the FBI were pressuring, social media sites to go with a certain narrative and to, you know, to depress other narratives, for example, the Hunter Biden laptop, which would have probably have swung that election if it had been properly aired publicly. So, you know, his government, he said, well, you know, the government shouldn't be doing those things. And that was one of his executive orders, that government won't interfere and censor at all, which, I mean, it's in their constitution. But and then he's also, called for an investigation of that and recommendations to prevent it happening again. So that's fantastic. And what I was, the point I want to make is that a lot of people have a cartoonish idea of Donald Trump, but you know, you should judge a politician on his policies. And the policies, to me, look super sound. I mean, you know, limiting the size of government, for instance. And he said, you know, he's put a moratorium on new hires and said, well, you know, no more hiring people until we, you know, understand what the situation is. You've got Elon and Vivek are going to look at government efficiency. Are there a bunch of people working there that aren't doing anything? I think a massive amount of their government employees work from home. And I think, you know, in South Africa...
Not anymore.
Well, he just told them they all must come back to work. Let's see what you do, and let's see whether you do anything at all. Because apparently a lot of these people that work from home are, in fact, doing other jobs.
Ah.
And they're having a dual income. So, you know, and, you know, sometimes when you go to our, you know, the local or provincial offices, they seem fairly like most people are not there. And what I like about what's being initiated in the States, because we said earlier a lot of that stuff bubbles over into other countries and into the rest of the world, is a good hard look at government and accountability, perhaps, you know, where because nobody's ever accountable in government. The most horrendous things happen and nobody falls on their swords and there's no accountability. Look at the LA fires, for instance, you know. And so I think there has to be an accountability. Government has to be run like a business, must be efficient. Government must show you that the taxes they take from you are being well spent, and there hasn't for a long time been that sort of impression that you get from any government where they go, well, thank you for the taxes, we'll show you how we spend it, you know, and we'll spend it well. I just think, for example, if you go to Home Affairs or you go and renew your license for your vehicle, or, you know, it's always the most horrendous grounds, they're not properly maintained, they're probably exorbitant leases just to be in those buildings. You know, they all lack, you know, they all need a coat of paint and then some civic pride, and then the people there just treat you like, you know, like you're some sort of subspecies that's wandered in off the pavement. Sit here, do that, go away, go to this window. You know, if your bank treated you like that, you wouldn't go back to that bank. And so, you know, I think there's going to be an accountability for government.
Do you think that, well, that's the American scenario, but do you think it'll have repercussions in countries like ours?
It will do because these, you know, there's a trend and an example that gets set by, and they pressure other countries as well. And they go, look, you know, if we're going to trade and you don't want tariffs, or if you want us, you know, just suspended all foreign aid. So if you want foreign aid again, you know, you're going to have to come into line with our view and our values.
Interesting how he's cut the ties with the World Health Organization.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was just such a, you know, it was so obvious at the time that the World Health Organization had been completely captured by the pharmaceutical industry. I mean, the advice that they gave on COVID, for instance, was totally counterintuitive. It was the opposite of good advice. For example, you know, most of the fatalities had one thing in common. They had very low vitamin D. So one of the things you should have been doing is being out in the sunshine. You know, banning people from going to the beach, for example, was just an idiotic policy. And so, there were a lot of things. There were other at it and going, well, it was quite obvious that there was only one objective of the World Health Organization and pharma, and that was that there was only going to be one solution to this, and it was their solution. And it turns out it wasn't a very good solution because it didn't work. So, you know, ultimately, I think he's saying, well, you know, it exists for a pandemic. Inter alia, it was so poorly handled that nobody has any faith in it. So why are we giving it $160 million every year? And so, you know, I mean, he's basically calling everyone to account. And I think, you know, I admire that. I think it's great. I think the world needs it. You know, he's withdrawing from the OECD. There's a deal that all the countries are a part of, and that is that there's a certain minimum. There's a certain minimum taxation for corporations below which you cannot go. So the game's now rigged, you know. No country can say, well, we'll tax companies less and attract them. So, you know, it's rigged by the parasite or political class in their own favor. And, you know, there should be competition over taxes. You should be able to say, well, we'll give you a better deal if you come here, because that's good for all of us. Then we pay lower taxes. And, you know, government as well. I mean, the government has to be smaller. It has to be less involved. I liked very much the fact that he said, you know, this effort of government over the past 4 years to dictate, you know, racial and gender relations has been a disaster. You know, he's going to ban critical race theory from schools as long as together with trans ideology. What is it doing in schools? You know, And you know those ideologies have created way more divisiveness. Race is suddenly
what is the critical race theory?
Well, it basically is it's a theory that if you're of a certain race, then you have certain characteristics. So if you're white, you automatically
almost eugenics.
Yes, you're automatically an oppressive person, and you oppress other races. And if you're African, you automatically
a victim. Is this an American policy at the moment?
Well, no, but it's taught in schools. Oh. And it's been coming a long way, this theory from the 60s already. You know,
oh, my word.
And it's pernicious, and it brings race into everything.
Well, that's kind of a game that we play very well in this country.
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, last year America led the way with their Asian Students for Fair Admissions versus Harvard, where they said, look, you know, for every guy you bump up because of the color of his skin, there's an Asian student who had better marks who's now not going to Harvard, and that in itself is racist. And Clarence Thomas, an African judge, African American judge himself, was one of the lead judges who said, yes, there's no place for it in American society. It should be colorblind and it should be done on merit, which is exactly what Trump has just said. And, you know, we've got BEE here. It's been a disastrous policy. It's held the economy back in a massive way. It's really just a source of corruption where certain people have to be inserted in transactions with government. And take their share, and everything's just more expensive, and you get less and less for your tax dollars because there's always an intermediary. So, you know, I understand the need to resolve issues of the past, but as Clarence Thomas said in that one, what is the sunset clause? Where does this end? You know, is it 100 years, 200 years, 500 years? I mean, there's people still carping on about slavery that happened in the 17th century. You know, where's the sunset clause on all of this? Where do we go? Like, hang on, we are where we are, and let's move forward.
But generally speaking, I take it from your ebullient tone with regard to global politics, Jeff, you're more confident with Trump at the helm of the biggest democratic Western capital.
I think so. You know, and my reasoning is the policies. As I've said, the policies are liberal policies. You know, we have sat at a civilizational threat, and there is a massive culture war undergoing, especially like in countries like Europe and countries that are losing their identity and their nationality because of the fact that they've allowed unchecked immigration. They've allowed people into their country that don't share their values and don't want to share their values and don't want to integrate with them. So this whole idea of a melting pot, which America's always been, is a great idea, provided that the people that come there become Americans and follow American values. And the same counts for the European countries. And this, I think everybody's been rudderless for like the last decade and a half, and going, well, you know, I don't know, you can't argue anymore because then you're a racist. You can't have a point of view, otherwise you're a fascist. You know, people that have said, well, this is wrong. Well, what about the rights of the people that lived there originally? You know, and so I think what's happening with Trump and America's the bastion of our Western civilization, and if it's not strong and if it's not healthy, the whole world suffers, and that's a fact.
Okay. And well, you make a very convincing point. That's why, you know, you're in the profession that you are in. Not everyone is a fan. And, of course, the jury is out because you need to take a view down the line. Is this going to be a good thing or a bad thing? We are cautiously optimistic and hoping that it's going to that wind is going to blow across the planet.
There's very few people on either side of the aisle that didn't feel like change is necessary.
Mm.
Like the world and America and all the countries like our own is in some kind of malaise, some directionless, rudderless place where we just don't have those positive visions for ourselves and a belief in the future and the belief that the future will be better. And I think Trump's speech was very much about that. He said, I'm going to make America great again. We're going to do certain things. We're going to, you know, we're going to make life better for Americans, and we're going to, as America, become a greater, stronger, bigger country.
Okay.
And so, you know, we should be thinking like that. We should go, well, how do we improve our lot here? Because, you know, at the moment, everybody's got an excuse, and it always eventually degenerates down the fact that we had apartheid, you know, 30 years ago.
And before that, Van Riebeek.
Yes, Van Riebeek is
the problem.
A bad fellow. Even though he was a coward.
But sure, you know, these are issues that are...
The point of the matter, why I'm excited about this, is I honestly feel that we just need our noses pointed in a positive direction, all of us, because we can do so much better.
Yeah.
We shouldn't have the levels of unemployment we've got in this country. We shouldn't have the levels of crime we've got in this country. A lot of things are wrong. But no, everybody makes an excuse for it being so instead of making a plan to end it. And we need to start courting business. We need to start courting foreign investment. We need to throw the Marxist and socialist policies we have out of the window and start making this a welcome place for people to do business, to grow their existing businesses. We need to stop throttling our economy with high taxes and stupid regulations. And South Africa, too, will have to follow suit if we're going to compete on the globe. And I think what Donald Trump's going to do for America is give them a massive edge on the rest by getting rid of regulations, by decreasing taxes, and by nurturing business and the economy, which is actually what pays for everything, including the freebooters that are in Parliament.
Good point to end it on. Gavin Steinhobel, our attorney at law from Kloppers Inc., never one to mince his words, and I think you've made a good case for certainly those that are hopeful that the winds of change are beginning to blow from America across the planet. We'll watch and see with bated breath, and we'll be back with Gavin in a week's time.
Yes,
for another.
Dave, yes, next week I'm going to bring one of our developer clients, because there has been a feeling that we should speak about property a little bit more. And so it's a very interesting development. It's a very new way of doing property. You know, quite a lot of it's been sold already, and people are living that lifestyle, and a lot of positive feedback. So I'll have one of my developer clients here on Wednesday next week, and we'll discuss what's coming to Belito over the next series of weeks.
And we look forward to that immensely. The morning show continues.